You're listening to the Ghost Hunter Advice Podcast.
Advice from the pros and stories from the haunted. You are listening to the Ghost Hunter Advice Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, guys. Today, we have our first in a series of interviews. I'm joined by Kevin Phillips. Kevin was actually on a paranormal investigation and was able to find and help preserve a lost epitaph of Lady Sarah at the Great Bar Hall in the Best Midlands in Wales. Kevin, thank you so much for coming on to the show. We're going to talk about how that happened, get into his story, and talk about how maybe you guys can help preserve a little bit of history in your investigations. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man, thanks for coming on.
That was an amazing intro. I honestly thought that you'd do that in a booth quietly alone, so I can confirm to all your listeners that you do that live.
Yeah. This is a whole new setup, man. With the new studio stuff that we were able to put together, we can do a lot of this like just on the fly. So I'm super happy to have that finally set up. So you were at the Great Bar Hall. What brought you out there, man? We'll go ahead and jump right into it.
Okay, so basically I've been doing paranormal investigations via YouTube for a short period, and I did the usual of posting videos in social media to try and at least extend the reach of the videos. I think everybody kind of mildly narcissistically does that. And in one of the paranormal groups, a gentleman called Toby Langford, basically, he commented and gave me a recommendation. He'd seen one of the videos and basically said, oh, you should try going to this place called Great Bar Hall. And I watched his YouTube videos, and he'd never been in the hall, and I think he recognized that I were like part urban explorer, part paranormal investigator, so he knew I'd crawl into the basements and stuff. And I just called along just on that recommendation, really, and after watching Toby's videos, I kind of built upon his information and research and fell in love with the place. And it's one of those buildings where it looks like a haunted house. It looks exactly what you imagine a haunted house would look like.
Are those like Scooby-Doo vans sitting outside? Sorry.
Yeah, no, exactly. It is exactly that. It really does. There's like white sheets of tarpaulin that are torn, blowing in the wind, and it all looks like it couldn't look any more ghostly if it tried, you know?
So like, how many times did you go out there before this particular story happened?
Okay, so when I first, building on Toby's research, I'd done a little digging of my own, and he was looking for a cursed tree that he never found. And so because he recommended the place, I kind of thought, I'll help him find his tree. And while I was looking into that, I found this reference of these poetic epitaphs dedicated to Lady Scott's favourite pet. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to try and contact the spirit of Lady Scott, then I really need to have something personal, a kind of, you know, I suppose a triggering item, and in this case a poem, something that's personal to her own words. And so I just thought, I've got to find these poems. And I went to the hall and I had my first daytime investigation, walking around just getting a feel for the place. A couple of things happened. I had a small light anomaly, and I'm pretty sure I had a kind of woman's moan, but I stand on something at the same time, so it's difficult to really say, yeah, that were paranormal. But I didn't find these stones. The only reference is that they were near the chapel, but near the chapel is very vague. So I had to leave with my tail tucked between my legs, having not found them. And going back onto research, we were really digging for these trees, this cursed tree. And Toby actually built upon some research that I'd done and ended up finding it. So it kind of felt like, well, we've completed his bit, but I needed to find these stones, and they were preying on my mind. It really made me dig into research. And until that point, I just kind of, you know, typed in things in Google, like, you know, haunted locations, and then just gone with whatever it says in the newspaper article. So this made me really dig into kind of historical archives. And, you know, I was kind of like that, like a cliched montage of me in a library with like microfilm and all kinds of stuff, you know,
the stuff people don't talk about.
Yeah, no. In fact, librarians at one point, they were using the microfiche, and they had to actually call in an expert because no one had used it in so long. Oh, wow. They were shocked that someone were asking to use it. You know, it was like no one in the building knew how to operate it. So I'm looking at all these historical cuttings and stuff. And don't get me wrong, most of my research was done online. It was just a bit more in depth than just haunted Great Bar and trying to siphon off secondhand ghost stories. So I was looking into the kind of history of it. And it meant that I dug up quite a few bits of poetry because we'd found the curse, but we didn't know where the tree was. And we've ended up finding quite a lot of poetry. In fact, there was a tale with one of, not the Lady Scott, but one of the Lady Scots allegedly had an affair with Branwell Bronte, the brother of the Bronte sisters. And that's not entirely true. He fell in love with a young girl. He had a romantic liaison. She went off and married someone richer. That person died, and she then married into the Scott family and became a Lady Scott. So there wasn't an affair, but Branwell Bronte wrote a poem about this woman. So the whole investigation became about poetry, really. But I had to find these stones, and I tried all kinds of crazy things. I've been reading for another video. I've been reading the book of the sacred magic of Abramelin the Mage, and I attempted a ritual for finding lost treasure. And I was clutching at straws, but it was like, why not? I'll try anything at this point, because I really needed these stones. And literally a few days after I'd done this, I had a really vivid dream, and I don't want to connect it to the magic ritual, but there's a long list of really weird coincidences. Mm-hmm. And so I am a skeptic. I don't believe that there's anything magical or paranormal at work here, but it's like I had a really vivid dream, and I think it's because all of the research in this place were preying on my mind. I couldn't let it go, and I had this dream about finding the stones. And the next morning, it was such a vivid dream that I felt compelled to go back to the hall, and it was like, right, I'm going this morning. And I went and I dug where I found the stones in my dream. I stripped all the brambles back. I were gardening in a ruin at this point. So I must look like a madman to all the dog walkers, because this ruin, it's overgrown. It's not a heritage site. So I'm cutting through brambles and moving rubble. And literally, as soon as I found earth, the first thing that I found was this old corner of an old stone. Now, the three poem stones, as it turns out, they're not there and they've been stolen. I know that now for a fact. I've got photos of these three stones, and only one of them's readable. So I can read the dog poem, but we are still looking for references to these two missing poems. But the stone that we found is a fourth epitaph, and it's not got poetry written on it. And no one knew about this one, or very few people knew about it, because even these poems, the poem stones had gone. So everyone just left this building to turn to ruins. And then this stone, it turned out to be a dedication to a horse. The Bounder is the name of the horse. And the horse died in 1908. I'm going from memory, so I could be slightly wrong on some dates and stuff, but I don't think that's, that just encouraged others to go and research. Don't take my word for it. Go online. This horse, it wasn't actually Lady Mildred Bateman Scott, who was the last Lady Scott of this property. She died in 1909, and this dedication of a horse was a late son's favourite horse. And so her son died in 1884, Sir Arthur Scott died. He died at like 22, 23 years old. And this horse died over 20 years after he did. So it was obviously a gift, and then he died young. And so this was Lady Scott's last sentimental link to her dead son. So much so did she love this son that even 20 years later, she makes a stone epitaph dedication to his horse, you know? And in the kind of Victorian era, pet cemeteries, I mean, people could be eccentric, but pet cemeteries were relatively unheard of. And this stone, it's ornate. There's carvings of it looks like a tree stump on each side, the way it's been carved. And so it's like, realistically, she died in 1909, and this stone was a dedication to a horse in 1908. So it might have even not just been significant for her son and the sentimental link, but it might have even been the last significant thing that she did before she died. And so once I'd found it, as I'm uncovering it, I phoned Toby up, who'd given me the recommendation, and I just said, I think I've found it. I haven't uncovered the writing. You better get down here. And as soon as I hung up, I realized, what if it isn't the stone and he's coming down and I've found a doorstep or something, you know? But as it turned out, he came down and I started peeling away some of the dirt and rubble, because the building had fallen. It's amazing this stone had survived. the buildings falling onto it and around it. It was covered not just in overgrowth, but rubble. And I'm peeling all this rubble back, and words start to emerge. So I think you can imagine how excited I got. I think in the video there's quite a lot of bad language, but it's happy bad language.
I'll have to check it out. We'll have a link to the video in the show notes. But yeah, this is an incredible story with a lot of things that just come together. And this is where it starts getting interesting. So I will shut up and let you keep on with this part.
I, like I said, there's a lot of strange coincidences with this story, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's like you'd think having a dream about this place after doing a magic ritual, after doing research and finding this stone that's like this final piece of a puzzle, you'd think that would be enough. But I then decided, I knew that Lady Scott, she was buried in the local church, St. Margaret's Church, and that's literally, it was just 5 minutes from the hall. It's literally on the original estate of the hall. And so it's where the family crypt is. And I just thought, this stone shouldn't be here with this building and, you know, the ruined building and under this rubble. It's because it has this sentimental link to her as well. I just felt it has to go next to her graveside, because it's not about a horse. It's about her son. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So because of that personal connection, I felt compelled that we had to save it. So I tried to contact the landowners, but as it turns out, this life started to get in the way, and this hall is literally on a boundary point of three different kind of postcodes, sort of areas. And so even the local councillors were not sure whose jurisdiction it was under. And so the land itself, it was divided up, and there's a company that owns part of the land, and then the other part of the land is between 18 private landowners. And so I had a nightmare trying to get a hold of the right people. And I'd been informed by certain people that the landowners of the hall have had problems with the community in terms of every time they try to put planning permission forwards, that the community stops it. And it's like the consensus was they didn't want that piece of history to be knocked down, even if a replica was going to be built. But that then meant that the building was left to rot, you know, because restoration is impossible. This building's too far gone. So I had a 4 month battle trying to find and contact the landowners. In the meantime, I'd contacted the church, because I thought, well, no good getting landowner permission if the church don't want the stone. So I just thought, well, while I'm waiting, I'll contact everybody. And I don't think there's a person in Birmingham that I didn't contact to try and move this stone. And luckily, the church, they were so gracious. The Reverend, he was quite a Scott family enthusiast. And in fact, he pointed out that in the stained glass window of the church, there's actually an image of Sir Arthur Scott that Lady Scott had made when he died 20 years previous to this horse passing. So it just solidified that stone had to be there. You know, it wasn't just next to Lady Scott and Sir Arthur Scott is buried with her, but there's this image of him in a stained glass window. And so basically, I'd given up. I kept giving up. I kept thinking, this is too much and no one's going to respond. And then Toby, bless him, had just sent me a message and go, how's it going? And that'd prompt me to be like, you know what, I'll contact somebody else and see. And then literally a councillor just said, yeah, I know the landowner, I'll have a word with him. And next thing I'm having a phone call, and this guy knew exactly what I wanted. So as I'm speaking to this landowner, I'm trying to kind of, you know, be as generous as possible and sort of say, you know, by giving this stone back to the community, it's going to benefit you and the sale of the hall. And he, all the way through this guy's just going, Kevin, stop, stop, stop. And I thought, oh no, he's going to tell me no. He's going to say, you know, it doesn't matter, I don't care. And he literally said, you can have it. And I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah, he goes, I can't get down to open it up for you for a couple of weeks. He said, so if you can get it through fence, just take it. And I was like, didn't really know what to say, but I knew I couldn't get this stone was quite big. It's like it seemed to be like a headstone of a grave. And I thought, I can't lift it. So I was like, I'm going to need keys. And he came down himself. He didn't, because, you know, the landowners have got a few money. They've got a fair bit of money. So I expected them to send a workman down, but no, the landowner himself came down and he stayed with us all day while we dug this thing out. And while we were digging it out, this is where it started to get strange. First off, the stone is nearly a foot thick at its base, and it seemed to be tapered originally as if it were stood up. And when we lifted it onto wheels, we found that on the back of it there was a mason's mistake, and the mason's mistake said died January 20th, 1899, and it's like, so this is a mason mistake from 10 years before the horse died. So that were quite interesting, that a stone can have something, you know, where they've just chip a mistake and they think, oh well, we'll cast this stone aside and use the other side of this stone, you know, 10 years later. And what's really weird about that is my birthday is January the 20th. Okay, not 1899. So it's not that one, but it's a little bit of a coincidence, you know, coupling that with the way this stone was found. And then literally, we couldn't lift this stone. Like I say, it were a foot thick. And so I looked like we weren't going to get it on the wheels. And so I was just happy to dig around it to loosen it up until we could afford machinery to do it, because I didn't have that kind of money. I was hoping maybe I'll find funding or this, that, and other. My brain was cycling around. And then one of the friends that had come down to help, her husband was kind of sat in the periphery, and she goes, oh, my husband's an ex-engineer. And she went over and had a word with him, and he came down and he goes, yeah, we'll just lever it out. And he just literally picks up a load of scaffolding from around this ruined building. And he explained what we were going to do. And I'm not afraid to admit that even after he'd explained it, I didn't fully understand it. I was just like, just tell me what to do. All right. And he basically, we had like three levers, and one at each side kind of raising the stone up, and one at the back operating like a gondola so that it's pushing the stone forward as it's lifting up. And that's the best way I can describe it. And it's probably a really poor description. And we got it. So it's touching the wheels, but the last bit meant it, because it was now touching the wheels, every time we pushed forward, it was just pushing the wheels forward. And so we needed to lift it up fully. And it were like, we didn't have the manpower. And I just thought, what we need is, we need two big, strong men. And sure enough, two people just happened to be walking by. Two big, strong men. They just walking up, and they're like, you all right? And I'm like, hiya. And they go, oh, we've seen your video. We've come down to look at this stone. And they'd just seen the video of me finding it. Not obviously, we were in the process of saving it 4 months later. These guys had just popped down to have a look at this stone. And it's like, oh, we're trying to move it to Lady Scott's grave, and we're struggling at a minute. You couldn't give us a hand, could you? And they were like, yeah. As it turned out, they did say to me they didn't want me to mention them in the video or film them. So they're not in the video of us doing this. But they literally came through, these two big burly men, and they just lifted it and put it onto these wheels. And then we tied some lash around it and started pulling it up the road. And the stone was that heavy that it literally, the wheels, they'd stopped going around, and it had started to turn them into half moons. And so we were dragging this stone for the most part. And we were starting to struggle all the way up this road. Not struggle too much, but it was certainly hard going. And we knew the wheels weren't going to last. And I should say as well, I forgot to mention, but as we got this stone up, I couldn't help but think that maybe there was going to be something under this stone. And I'd said to Toby, it's a shame we don't have a metal detector. And anyway, as we're halfway up this road with this stone, and these wheels are going, and two guys are walking down the road, and different two guys. And they're like, oh, what are you doing? Because we're all pulling this stone, and we all look like we're moving some Egyptian monument. And we've found this epitaph, and we're going to move it to Lady Scott's grave. It's like, but we're struggling. Wheels are nearly gone, and we're showing these guys. And he goes, oh, well, we're just down here. We were just checking this place out because we do metal detecting, and we were going to just have a look around. He goes, but I think I've got a trolley jack that'll fit that. So this guy goes in his van and goes home. And it's like, everything starts to get a bit weird. It's like, we figured we'll try and just drag it to the top. We'll drag it as far as we can while we wait for this guy, because we also felt like maybe he's not going to come back. And as we got to the top of the road, we meet this metal gate. And it's one of those metal gates that's designed to just stop traffic from moving down a private road. And the bars on it meant that there was no way this stone was going to go through it. But there was one side where it just might have gone. And sure enough, we cleared a load of rubble away from ground, and we dug down a bit, and it was like it were perfect fit. It was like it were meant to be. And it kind of felt like every time we hit a problem, a solution presented itself immediately. You know, it was like we couldn't get the stone out of the ground. We had an engineer. We couldn't get it on the wheels. We needed more manpower. More manpower turned up. I wanted a metal detector. Two metal detectors turn up. And then while, as soon as we got it through the actual metal gate that I'm talking about, where it fit perfectly through, at that point, my wheels just completely, like a cartoon, just spread out. And it were like when a cartoon car dies and its wheels just pop out at sides. And literally, as soon as that happened, up comes this van with this guy with the metal detector, and he's got this trolley jack, and we shoved it onto there, and it went straight round easy enough, and we popped it next to Lady Scott's grave, where it's still there now. But I have been told that there's a good chance, because of health and safety, that they are going to either sink it into the ground or move it, and I think they're going to end up putting it in the church. Oh, but wow. At least it's in the... It's in the vicinity of, you know, I really do feel it should stay next to Lady Scott. But, you know, there is the image of Sir Arthur Scott in the church. But it's just like, there were just so many strange things from me having this dream, even me getting to this place, we're on this recommendation. Not everything was just a roll of the dice and pure chance, you know. At that point as well, I'd never been into collaboration. I was doing investigations, and my take on things were, if I'm going to a place, I don't want to be influenced. If I know there's a ghost of a monk, I'm going to be looking for a ghost of a monk. Mm-hmm. So I would just go into places as blind as possible. But after this one, I realized the importance of research and working together, because it wanted me and Toby team up on a regular basis now. But on the moving of this stone, we really did kind of build a community. The handful of people that have just joined us to help move this stone have actually kind of formed a kind of loose network of paranormal investigators. You know, it's like it's almost like we're getting the band back together. We're getting the A team together, you know? And it's like, I didn't realize that just doing a little bit of research and just reaching out on social media instead of just narcissistically just trying to get views, to actually kind of work together with somebody in terms of, oh, you should try going here. And it's like, and then you go there, and then this whole network builds up around it, you know, because it's like there's other groups that Toby's connected with separately, and now there's other groups I'm connected with separately, and we're kind of slowly forming this giant web where we're all becoming a community. And, you know, I think that's something that's been kind of lacking in the paranormal community, because everybody's kind of, you know, a fear of the stranger kind of thing, and distant from one another. And this whole experience of this stone, it's really built. I can't overuse the word community enough, because it really, like, some of the people that were there moving the stone only came to move the stone. They didn't really, I know them from other groups and stuff, but I didn't have the manpower. And now we're all like best friends. We're out every weekend doing investigations together and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that's where sorry to cut you off there. We're going to have to come up on a commercial break, but that is absolutely right. Like, getting a community and putting yourself out there, these amazing things never happen with one person. These things come together because multiple people make it happen. And that's where this big change comes from. But we are going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, man, I've got some story, some questions to go through you with this story, because it is just amazing, the stuff that came together on it. Thanks for tuning in to Ghost Hunter Advice, guys. So we are going to be working on something where we're doing a lot more listener call-ins and a lot more engagement. So if you guys have a story, if you have an encounter, if you have a question that you would like discussed on the podcast, email us at ghosthunteradvice@gmail.com. And guys, don't forget to go to Facebook and join the group. There's a lot of great discussion going on in there. There's a lot of questions being answered, and it's just a great community. So search out Ghost Hunter Advice Group on Facebook. And remember, if you're listening to the podcast, subscribe, rate, and review. That is the quickest way to help us grow. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show and for just being such fantastic listeners. Let's get back into it. Welcome back to Ghost Hunter Advice. I am still here with Kevin, and you just listened to his amazing story. And Kevin is such an amazing storyteller that... It's just best to let it go and let you guys hear everything that came together with this. So when you started out, you were talking to us about a cursed tree that originally got you out to this property. So what was going on with the cursed tree? Because I know everybody's curious about that.
Okay, so Toby recommended the place after he'd found this place, I believe, by accident as well. he'd found a reference to a curse where Lady Bateman Scott allegedly, and I say allegedly, cursed a tree. And he wanted to find this tree. And he'd been all around the grounds and scoured the internet and couldn't find it. And so we kind of clubbed together. In fairness, he kind of ended up finding it himself anyway. But I think because we'd teamed up, I'd kind of given him that extra prompt. I've got the curse actually here in front of me. And it says, I plant this tree with some aversion as nature controls her own reversion. When reversion is completed, all Bateman Scots will be deleted. Whosoever cuts or harms the tree will likewise suffer some adversity. Now, I say allegedly because the other poems that we've got, that's a different cadence. And so I've got a suspicion this is a folk tale that's built up. And so Toby managed, I don't even know how Toby did this, but he managed to find out what sapling tree this was. And as it turns out, there's only one on the ground, so it has to be that one. Now, there's also stories of, there is a story of the curse of, there's a gardener who was trimming the tree and also trimmed some of his fingers off. A gentleman who cut one of the branches off because it was going to be dangerous over the road, he died 2 weeks later. I believe children that had climbed it had fallen and hurt themselves quite severely. And I don't just mean gone to hospital, I mean like had physical ailments for the rest of their lives. But there's very little to suggest that these are anything other than folk tales, because once the hall had been sold off in the 1920s, it was sold off to the NHS and became a mental asylum. And the tree was one of these trees where it was called the hanging tree. The story was that many of the mental patients had hung themselves in that tree, which I think there were many patients who did hang themselves, but I think it was just not numerous trees all around. But the folk tale of this tree is very much stay away from this tree. So it must have some significance, but I just don't know that this curse is written specifically by Lady Scott.
So this hanging tree and legends like this, when you go out to investigate them, so many people want to poke the bear. Here we have the Bellwitch Cave where people want to steal stones and stuff from it. If you have a story like that, the best way to research a curse is to do what you did and look back at the folklore and see if there is any way to validate the stories, like the stories of the hangings, the stories of the person missing fingers. And that again is like the story you told about being in the library with microfiche. That's where you go to do that.
Yeah, and it's like as well this hanging tree before it was a hospital, before the hospital was there. It also there was a tale of Lady Scott allegedly had an affair with Branwell Bronte had an affair with somebody and was hung from that tree, which isn't true. It stems from that Branwell Bronte story of him falling in love with somebody who became a Lady Scott. And so again, it becomes that kind of historical Chinese whispers where people get, you know, a slight fact gets twisted and then the next person just continues that and it becomes a non-truth, you know, but there must be something to do with this tree. Folk tales are there for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if it is a cursed tree, but there's certainly everything throughout its folk tale is stay away from this tree. So I have a suspicion maybe Lady Scott buried some under it.
Really?
You know? Yeah, because she seemed quite an eccentric woman, which is why I actually thought maybe there'd be something under this stone for this horse. But obviously, private land, I don't want to pester the owners too much for something that is just a hunch, you know?
Especially if they're looking to sell it. The last thing they want is to dig a body out from under a tree. That slows down sales.
Yeah. And also, if the curse is true, what do you do about the item that's underneath? Because you can't be cutting this tree down.
Also, yes.
You know, it's like, I don't believe in curses, but I'm not prepared to test them either.
Yeah. I mean, they're there for a reason. I think a lot of times, and especially in areas that have such a rich and such an old history, like Wales and Europe in general, there's usually a reason for folktales. There's usually a reason for stories of curses, whether it's an area where there's sickness or if there's just something that people don't want found around an area. But so you said that you're very skeptical about the curse and you're skeptical in general. You had you had tried a spell to locate treasure before all of these crazy coincidences started happening. Tell us a little bit about that.
Because I'm skeptical, I've been reading some of the Renaissance grimoires because there's a lot of YouTube videos where people are, you know, you get some moody gothic teenager where they pretend to be telling you about how to summon demons, and it usually you draw a pentagram and you need five black candles, and you know, you shout a demon's name, and it's like, you know, some of that kind of McDonald's version of witchcraft. It doesn't sit well with me, and so I started to look into really attempting this. You know, as a skeptic, if I honestly thought there were a demon going to pop up, I wouldn't really try this. But at the same time, there's an element of, you know, it's also why I'm looking for ghosts. It's like the second I get something where I'm like, that's 100%, it's like, okay, I'll become a monk and go and live wherever, you know, because if there is something more, then it's time to become religious. But until then, so I'm basically just as a kind of form of entertainment, I just figured I'm going to read some of these ancient grimoires and attempt some of the summoning spells. And to be honest, even some of the dark ones, not as dark as what you think. The Grimoirum Verum is allegedly the dark one that everyone talks about. When people talk about satanic rituals, that's the one they're thinking of, which there are no such thing as satanic rituals. That Satanism is an Anton LaVey invention, you know, and so there is no satanic rituals. In fact, the Grimoirum Verum, yes, it does have blood sacrifices and human skulls in certain rituals, which everyone's like, but you're actually using the protection of God to control these dark entities. And so it's not about worshipping demons. When you summon, it's very much like the idea of King Solomon summoning. In fact, that's why you even have the grimoire, The Lesser Key of Solomon. And so I don't feel as bad trying this, because there's a few people, when they find out what I'm going to be attempting, they're like, you can't be doing that. And it's like, well, you should look into it a bit more, because it's not as dark as it seems. And so I've just been doing a lot of the cleansing and stuff and attempting some of these rituals. So far, not a lot's happened, except for when I did the chapter 16 of the Abramelin, which is the ritual for finding lost treasure. I had a dream about finding this stone. I mean, it's not an expensive artifact, not in the slightest, but it was something I was looking for, and it could be deemed as a local treasure, I suppose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that genuinely had anything to do with it, unless, because somebody said to me, maybe it's psychological, you know? It's like, maybe there's a psychological element at play here, because I did a lot of research and I did this ritual, and it's like, but if it's psychological, I still can't explain how I actually had a real world consequence, an actual epitaph. It's like, if it is internal, if it's magic, is psychological, like people say it's about intention and do-do-do-do. It's like, if that's the case, then that doesn't explain how I found an 18th century epitaph that no one knew about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's even more extreme than kind of doubting for water when people, you know, it's like, when people talk about ley lines and stuff like that, it's like, well, you know, typically if you go out, you'll find water somewhere.
Now, you it know? Could it's be like psychics. You put so much time and you put so much focus into this. There are times, and I do like to practice lucid dreaming, especially when I have a case where, like, I've got one right now where I'm trying to basically track down a missing mental patient. And in cases where you're looking for things, or cases where you're trying to solve a problem, maybe there's a you're trying to catch a ghost, or you're trying to catch a con artist is the most usually what a professional thief or a con artist is usually what I am trying to catch when I have one of these dreams. But I'll go to sleep and I'll have this dream and I'll walk around, and all of the research and the weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of stuff that I have put into my brain just floods out, and I get something that's incredibly useful. I will, however, say that I have gotten leads from it. I have never had a dream and then gone and dug in a certain location and there was the stone that I was looking for. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I certainly can't explain it, but I do think it has a lot to do with when I'm talking about magic and intention. I do think it does have a lot to do with intention, and I think it was since I was doing this on Lady Scott's behalf. And it was a very kind of selfless act, you know, moving this stone. It didn't really cost me any money to do what I did, but it cost me a lot of time. And, you know, I think there's an element of doing something like selflessly where domino effects. You know, if you're trying to, like, whenever I've been telling this story, the story is about this stone. It's not about me. You know, it's not about me finding it, because I'm not the amazing thing here. The amazing thing is the thing that was found. I think there's an element of when you stop fighting against the current to try to, you know, like I said, this started with me posting videos in social media to try and get views. It's like, I think when you stop fighting against the current like that, and you just do what you're doing because you love doing it and because you're compelled to do it, that it all the struggles kind of fall away. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the money doesn't come, but I've been told that eventually it will.
Well, there's something that they agree on in science and metaphysics, and that's energy attracts energy. So if you are putting out in sales and business, if you're positive and you are putting out a certain type of persona or energy, you're going to attract a certain type of persona or energy in your clients. As an investigator going out with a certain type of energy, you are going to just be a magnet for people that want to help. And it makes the job a lot easier when you're doing it for the right reasons and you're doing it. And it sounds super hokey, but just with the right energy and mindset to elicit these responses from people. And honestly, from this, you had the stone was, there was a date that matched up to your birthday. There's the dream. There's the two guys showing up. There's the dude with the metal detector, and then the trolley getting there just at the right time after you got it past the gate so that it would fit. So, I mean, there's so much going on here that has to do with the energy that you're putting out that motivates people to want to help you for the right reasons. And honestly, and I'm not a religious guy at all, but I think there was someone or something other than you that wanted this thing moved.
Yeah, no, I've been talking with Toby, and we honestly feel like it's maybe Lady Scott wanted it. You know, everything worked out like it was meant to be. Because I were kind of fighting against that and saying to people, well, why did it take 4 months if it were meant to be? And it's like, so all of these things could fall into place, because on that day we moved it, like you were saying, attracting people. We attracted people on that day, because every time we needed physical help from someone turned up, you know. And it was just a case of, you know, I think everyone could see we were trying to do this thing and failing. And I think there's an element of people just want to scoop you up and pick you up and get you to the finishing line. You know, if we'd have been pompous and been like, we've just found this stone and we're going to save it, you know what I mean? Whereas people could see us actually struggling to do this thing, you know, but the determination was there. So I think there's an element of the underdog, you know, where people really want to cheer on the underdog. Everyone loves a champion, but an underdog, you really become emotionally invested in that for some reason.
Yeah, you really get attached to it. It's, people love it, and that's why the movies do so well that focus on underdogs. It just you feel like you're part of the struggle. So you had mentioned that it took 4 months, and going back to making contact with the landowners and all of the people you had to talk to, this is a big problem for a lot of the listeners of the podcast and for paranormal investigators and ghost hunters, and that is getting property owners to give you access and to be helpful in any way whatsoever. So when you originally reached out to these people that you identified as the property owners, what were your first conversations like?
Okay, well, I think it's more important to go back beyond before that, because I've made a few mistakes, because there's a company that owned part of the land, and I'd contacted them, and they never responded, but I found out shortly after contacting them that it wasn't theirs. They own part of the land, but not the hall. And then I'd found the hall was for sale on one of the estate agent websites. And so I'd contacted the estate agent and sent them a lengthy email about me finding this stone and I really want to get in contact with landowners. And the estate agent got back to me, but then that went silent. And I just felt like, because some of the community had told me that these owners had had problems with community before, I just thought maybe they just don't want to talk to me. And like I say, at certain points like there, I'd given up, and then Toby would say, how's it going? And it'd prompt me to do a bit more. And so I started contacting local councillors and MPs, you know, local government, you know, because they're representatives of the people, and explaining that I'd found this artifact and I want to try and preserve it and give it back to the community and give it back to this historical figure that's buried not far away. Many of them wanted to help and couldn't, because they didn't know. And it just, it was just a case of keeping on chipping away until I found the right person who just happened to have this landowner's phone number and know the guy personally. And so I actually then had very little work to do because I'd used a middleman. So before the landowner even spoke to me, he'd already been informed that I'd found this stone. So I had very little work to do. The landowner was so gracious that he kept trying to stop me from talking because he just wanted to tell me just take it. So I think it's not fighting against, you know, never threatened in any way in terms of I have to save this stone and it belongs with Lady Scott. I were very much trying to suggest that it'll help the sale of the hall because a ruin for sale is impressive. A ruin that's still producing its secrets is even more impressive. You know, giving back to the community gets a better community vibe from the owners, you know, community relations and stuff. And he would just, you know, again, completely detached from vanity. He didn't want any of that because he was just happy for the stone to go. In fact, with the three poem stones that I've got a picture of all three and we can only read the dog poem, I said, I want to find the other two poems and have a new stone engraved with all of these poems so they're not lost. And I said to the landowner, I'd like to put your initials on the bottom of this stone as a kind of thank you. And he's like, no. I don't want any of that. So I didn't have too much interaction with the landowner because I'd gotten a member of local government to do that for me. And I think there's a lesson there because this is the first time I've actually had to do this. So this might not even be the official proper, you know, I can't give anyone advice because I think you've got to find your own way. Mm-hmm. But certainly having a government body behind you, people will listen more to a local councillor or governor or whoever more than they'll listen to a general member of the public. You know, they carry a bit more weight. So I think if you're going to approach a landowner, then it's just as important to get in contact with the people that you want, that many people see as the enemy, you know, because mm-hmm. they are there to help. Some of them don't. Some of them don't want to. Like I say, I contacted a lot of people who ummed and ahed and didn't really know what to do. You only need to find that one good member of the government and then I think all the doors just fly open for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that with a lot of stuff. You, if you find the right person, and I've talked about it on the show before, finding a third party that the individual that you're trying to work with trusts goes a huge, huge distance in gaining trust with that individual. It comes down to just basic networking. And you did, like, this is the number one rule for an investigator is don't give up. Whenever you hit a dead end, you try to find a way to go over, under, or through it. And that's what you did. So for every no that you got, you just kept going and you didn't let the rejection stop you, which is what stops a lot of guys.
No, there were several times where I'd thrown the towel in. But like I say, that all boils down to as well, that element of community we were talking about before, because every time I'd like try to contact somebody and it would fall down and they'd be like, sorry, can't help. I'd kind of be like, oh, well, never mind. And then Toby would just check in on me. And that element of having someone there to just go, how's it going? Have you found out any new news out? That were enough to make me go, you know what? I'm going to message some more people. And so I think you do need that kind of almost someone to cheer you on, you know, even though he didn't know he was doing that. He was just interested to see how we were getting on. So every week or so, Toby would send me a message and just, you know, check on what's happening. There were a couple of other close friends as well that had kind of been doing the same. And so I didn't really feel that I could give up because every time I did, someone had pushed me forward a bit more. And I think that cycles back then to that whole idea of build your community. Don't just build a team to go out with, you know, build a team and then network with other people because you can all support one another. I'm sure there's some idiots out there you don't want to connect with, but you don't you don't learn which ones are which without trying, you know?
And a lot of guys,
you've got to kiss a few frogs, right?
Oh yeah, man. And so many people identify as introverts in this field, but you can't do huge projects by yourself. You can't actually affect change by yourself. You have to get out there and you have to meet people and you got to get burned a few times. But it's part of it, and that's the only way to really make lasting change. So I mean, stay on it. Don't take no for an answer. Find another way around it or someone else to talk to. There are a thousand ways to find a solution to every problem and to find an answer for every problem. So if you're trying to solve history's mysteries, or you're trying to do a paranormal investigation and really get to the bottom of it, you just have to keep going until you find the answer. And a lot of these times, just like this one, it was 4 months, and getting the word out, getting the right people, and getting the right energy going, it just took time and not giving up. So, man, this has been an incredible story, and I thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing it. Listeners, if you are part of the Facebook community, the Ghost Hunter Advice group, there is a link in there. It's from a couple months ago, and I'll refresh it so it's up at the top of the page that leads to Kevin's videos. Kevin, do you have a website or somewhere where people can go to view your work?
No, I'm just doing this kind of part-time on YouTube. So there's just the YouTube channel. I probably will be opening social media pages up at some point, but I'm still relatively new. In fact, the reason we're talking is because I'm not new to this. I was looking for ghost hunting advice, and that's how I found your podcast. You have a specific episode on equipment that you'll need and stuff, and that were a catalyst for me doing this. In fact, I was and still am so far that I couldn't even afford the basic equipment mentioned. So I just figured, just go out with your camera phone if that's all you've got and call out, you know what I mean? And I've had relative success with that so far. So I suppose really I would only like to redirect people that haven't listened to every episode to go back in your podcast and certainly listen. Because I think the one where you're talking about the equipment that would be needed, I think I'd clicked on that specific episode because that title stuck out to me. But, I, you know, just to give you a push as well, it's like, go and listen to all of them.
Man, I appreciate it. I think that is one of the most popular episodes. But that's all it takes. I mean, if you've got the chops and you've got the research skills, or you're willing to put in, like, the hours and months it takes to develop them in the field, in the fire, those skills and the tenacity that you showed on this case and in this story will go farther, will take you farther than any EMF meter or spirit box will.
Definitely.
Well, man, that is going to wrap up this episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you haven't already, like our Facebook page, find us on whatever your favorite podcasting app is, and subscribe, rate, and review the show. It's the fastest way to help us grow. And connect with us in the Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, search us in the groups. I'm looking forward to talking to you guys in there. All right, until next week, this was Ghost Hunter Advice. Keep it spooky.